Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Thursday afternoon. Joining me from New York City, just back from Philadelphia, where he watched the 76ers and Cavs play on Wednesday night, is Tim Bontemps.
Hello, guys.
Bontemps, we got a big moment here. Because after years away from his second home on the NBA road, Ben McMahon is back in Oklahoma City.
Howdy, partners. Back in Bricktown, baby. The Pink Parrot is going to be, I mean, it's going to be a sight to see post-game tonight. I can promise you that.
You know, it always is. Since he's been a married man, he's calmed down. But this is a throwback to the roaring.
Listen, don't let's not hype it up too much, because I want to stay a married man, and Miss Maria is an avid listener, so I will be on my best behavior. Pink Parrot, that'll be a sight to see tonight.
Well, he's back. Going to go see the Adelaide 36ers play the Thunder.
Fresh off shoot around there, man. Talk to all five starters, the coach, the CEO. God, I love that NBL access.
Well, the Adelaide is 1-0 against NBA teams this year, at least to this point. We'll see what happens with the Thunder tonight. They have their season, their team season is their season's already going on in Australia. They took like a leave of their season to come up.
Yeah,
to the US
their
to
official
play.
NBL season theirs has not started. They played some exhibitions. The rest of the league is underway, and then these boys are going to fly back home, planning to kick some more butt fresh off whooping the Suns.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, I'm just glad that there's no hangover for the Suns from that Game 7 humiliation. I mean, they were able to keep within striking distance, never could quite make that run against those 36ers. 36ers are, mathematically speaking, not even half the team that the 76ers are, but they were more than enough for the Suns.
Well, the Suns played their second preseason game on Wednesday night, and LeBron scored, let me see, I think he had 23 points in 14 minutes.
If you can't stop Craig Randall II, I don't like your odds against LeBron.
23 points in 17 minutes in that one, and that was another loss for the Suns. They also – actually, they came back and won in the fourth quarter of that game, but they lost.
And then didn't LeBron say he was going to buy the Suns and move them to Vegas? Or am I getting my wires crossed just a little bit there?
I don't think you quite have that story right. The Suns actually won that game. They came back in the fourth quarter, but they effectively lost it. They also had a couple of injuries. We'll talk about that maybe later. Okay, but we're going to talk about another import, not the Australians. This week has been dominated by the show that Victor Wembanyama put on in Las Vegas. Now he and his team, the Metropolitan 92s. Is it the Metropolitan 92s or just Metropolitan 92? I don't know. I'm going to call them the 92s. We got to move on from the 36ers and focus on the 92s. Yes. We got that.
92s who are mathematically
better than the 76ers. It's just Metropolitan's 92.
I know. I like 92s better though. But anyway,
how do you say 92 in French?
Call your buddy Rudy. By the way, can I just point out that next summer in Paris, actually won't be next summer, but two summers in Paris, the French are going to have Victor Wembanyama and Rudy Gobert.
And maybe Joel Embiid.
Well, we'll see.
We'll see.
But I'll just
newly minted American citizen, Joel Embiid.
Interesting. Interesting that Joel Embiid's an American now, huh? Might need him against Victor Wembanyama.
Cameroon.
Yeah. All right. Wembanyama. So that game was as important of a game for a prospect, I think, since 2003. Actually, it was December of 2002. So 20 years almost. LeBron played a game on ESPN2. Do you guys remember that at all?
Was this against O'Kill? Against Melo?
Also my senior in high school. I remember it very well.
So he played Melo actually the year before.
As a junior, because Melo's a year ahead.
Melo was a year ahead, right.
That's right. And that was a classic game too, which O'Kill and Melo won. LeBron had like 36 and Melo 34, something along those lines. It was a big performance, but LeBron hadn't been on the cover of Sports Illustrated yet, and we didn't have the awareness of young stars like we do now. Wembanyama has been on our radars for 18 months and now on a lot more people's radars. So I have said, I have guessed that LeBron's performance that night, which, just to call back to it a little bit, it was on ESPN2. It was a very big deal. Dick Vitale and Bill Walton called the game. They came into Cleveland to call the game, and LeBron was great. I don't remember his stats, but he was great. Oak Hill was number one in the country at the time. They weren't as good as the year before when they had Carmelo, but LeBron put up highlights in that game that were shown on TV for the next 6 months. He had
how was the Akron Beacon Journal's coverage? Was it a pretty strong game story or
complete? It was blanket coverage of that game.
Okay.
And I have argued that he made $50 million that night. He might have even made more
in terms of a shoe deal.
Because the stakes to get him increased dramatically, and it ended up being an all-out war between Reebok, Adidas, and Nike. And while there would have been competition to get him before that, obviously, after America really knew who he was and getting him became a big deal. I mean, I've written about this extensively and I won't go down this, but I will just say that the day after Nike announced that they had gotten LeBron and Reebok, who was thought to be getting him, didn't, Reebok's stock went down and they had to put out a statement to their stockholders to try to keep the stock from going down. So that's what the stakes were at that time. And it was gasoline was poured on it by the LeBron's performance in that game. Mm-hmm. And so now I'm going to compare it to Wembanyama, who was even better than LeBron was in that game against better competition. To my knowledge, there were not future top 10 picks on the opposing side of Oak Hill. There certainly were in this case. And he was going up against some men, frankly, who also play for the Ignite. And what, I mean, I'd seen highlights of him before, and I was talking to some scouts afterwards, and they're like, look, he doesn't always shoot the ball that well. But
I mean, nobody in the world always shoots it that well, though.
Right. Now, he is playing again today as we're about to record this. It's in the afternoon. He's going to play in a few minutes here. So I don't know what he's going to do in this game when you hear this podcast. But Bontemps, you were at a game during that time. I think you went back and watched it. He had 7 threes and he hit them like 5 different ways. Mm-hmm. Not to mention his incredible size. It was as impactful of a performance in this type of situation since 20 years ago when I saw LeBron do it. And I think we have the excitement level like we had for LeBron 20 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think the best, you know, we haven't even mentioned Scoot Henderson's name, which I think we need to now, because he's going to be the second pick in the draft. Now, there are going to be ridiculous arguments about whether Victor is going to be the first pick in the draft, and there'll be all kinds of nonsense over the next
I don't think there will be.
Well, I mean, manufactured arguments. There's not actually going to be arguments. He's going to be the first pick in the draft, no matter.
Manufactured arguments, like when you argued against Jokic's MVP a couple years ago, those kind of things. Go on, Bontemps.
I'll just let that pitch go by.
No, I'm not taking the bait.
But listen,
the bat's on his shoulder.
This game to me, I mean, you talk about that LeBron game on ESPN, which I remember. I remember that was my senior year of high school. I mean, I remember when that was on, it was a huge deal. But I think the closest comparison to this game is almost when Shaq played Christian Laettner 10 years before that. Because, like, Scoot Henderson was awesome in this game. And, like, he looks the part, every bit the part of a big-time, multi-year, all-star level point guard. Big 6'4 kid, can do a lot of stuff. And he
looks tank-worthy as well.
Yeah, like, he's going to be a stud. But he just pales in comparison.
I've seen players like Scoot Henderson before. Mm-hmm. I've never really seen a player like Victor.
No, I mean, he's got a chance to be a Derrick Rose, like one of those kinds of players, which is a terrific player. But like you said, this kid is Victor Wembanyama is 7'4", coming off screens, hitting threes, going around screens, dribbling the ball, hitting threes, making dribble moves into the paint. He's still figuring it out on defense, but he's got crazy length and athleticism. He's flying over. and just obliterating guys from the weak side. He's long enough and quick enough that he can actually hold up a little bit in space. Like, you just look at him and he's like a guy created out of 2K. Like he does, the combination of stuff that he does, to your point where we haven't seen players like him. I mean, he's the size of guys like Ralph Sampson and Bill Walton and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and he's handling the ball and walking the ball up the court. Like, there's
stroking
a reason
it from 23 feet.
Right. And doing it
from the logo. The kid can hit off dribble from the logo at 7'4".
And even more than that, it's even more like we've seen guys like, you know, Chris Porzingis can really shoot it as a big guy. You know, Biao could shoot it from 3-point range really well as a big guy. He's a terrific shooter. The difference with this kid is he's doing it off the move. Like he is doing, like, you know, coming off screens like a guard. Like that's the thing that just separates him for me from everybody else. Like he can handle it some, but the versatility with his shooting, like we've just never seen anybody play like that. And he's 17 years old. I mean, it's staggering how good.
The other thing is, before you go, McMahon, from what I understand and talking to folks and what I've observed, he's really highly super competitive. Mm-hmm. And that's important because sometimes you get players who are really, really tall who play basketball because they're really, really tall and they don't necessarily have the makeup of what a great player would be. They don't have the competitive juice. They don't have the desire to get in there and fight. They don't have the desire to work on their games. It's a thing that happens. You know, you see it with football players too. Some guy who's out there playing offensive line because he's enormous or somebody who's really fast and they don't want to play football. Really. I know this sounds very basic. He looks like he wants to be great at basketball. And that's an important thing, an important box that you have to check when you're looking at him about his makeup too. All right, go ahead, McMahon.
Yeah. And I thought as far as the comp for him, Jonathan Givony, I thought nailed it. Rudy Gobert on the defensive end and a 7'4" Durant type of creature on the offensive end. I mean, the way he handles it, the way he shoots it, the step backs. I mean,
if he can shoot, he looked like Durant in that first game. I mean, we are speaking, we don't know what he's going to do in this game that's about to be played, but he sure shot the ball like Durant in that game.
Yeah. And you know, the other highlights that you see of him, like he's a guy, like there's a mid-range game. It's not just all the threes. Like there's, you know, stuff off the dribble, the fadeaways off the pivot, all kinds of stuff. And you know, he didn't play for France in Eurobasket. But obviously the coaches from the French national team, the head coach is the head coach for the 92s, hired this year with Victor coming in. But like some of the assistant coaches, I talked to those guys when we were over in Germany, just kind of asking about this dude, and they all rave about him from a character standpoint, an intellectual standpoint. Like the only question mark about this dude is with that frame, that lean, you know, he's had some health things already. Like, can he be durable? Can he stay healthy? But they say like this kid is an extremely, not just competitive, but a super intelligent guy. Apparently, like, you know, you throw some Legos in front of this kid and he's like building skyscrapers. You know, like a lot of kids, he plays video, but like his buddies will get video games. They'll play them for a couple months and then he'll pick it up and just dominate them. You know, he's just like got this genius level type of thing. Apparently he's like, give him a Rubik's cube and, you know, 6 seconds later, all the colors are lined up. That kind of, I don't even know what you call it. That kind of ability to think and put puzzles together. Plus the fact that he's 7'4", a ridiculously fluid athlete. Like the absolute floor for this guy is Kristaps Porzingis. That is the absolute floor. He's a much more fluid athlete though. Like Porzingis doesn't have that wiggle, that ability to change directions off the dribble, and you know, that sort of thing that Victor does. And I mean, it's crazy. He was so good in that game that Scoot Henderson was absolutely electrifying. His team won the game, and all anybody can talk about is this 7'4" guy.
I know, and I don't mean to put him down, but what are you supposed to say? Also,
well, look, I'll just say there was a couple of years ago, a guy got picked second after a guy everybody was fawning over for the first pick, and it worked out pretty good for Memphis.
You know, okay, whoever finished as number two in the lottery is not going to be disappointed.
And I'm not saying that to say the Victor's not going to be incredible. He is going to be. I just, to McMahon's point, like, everything we saw from Scoot Henderson was what you want to see. Like, this game was set up so Victor Wembanyama could come over here and play. Scoot Henderson was like, I'm going to show you guys I should be the number one pick. He came out. He hit shots. He was aggressive. He went right at him. Had a couple of plays where he got him moved off his spot, you know, hit a couple step backs on him. Like, his competitiveness, his shot, his frame, his athleticism, like, it's everything you want to see. Like, to McMahon's point. And even after that, this draft's supposed to be very deep. So
this is it. This is supposed to be an absolutely special draft.
Okay, we're going to talk about that just a second. Here's what also I love about Wembanyama. He might have a little bit of swagger in talking the way he talks to the media.
He might,
which would be great. So on Monday before this game, and your point exactly, Bontemps, real quick. This game was set up. This is a high pressure game
for both guys.
Yeah, and especially Wembanyama never played in the U.S. before. So he flies from France all the way to Las Vegas, has like 2 days, and then has to play in the highest value game in his career. Now, he would have been the number one pick, I think, no matter how he played. But his performance, and also Scoot Henderson knowing what was coming and him handling that, I agree. And that was one of the things about LeBron back then. It was an incredibly high-pressure game for LeBron, and he was completely aware of it. That game was set up for him to be displayed. And he overachieved, just like these guys overachieved. Mm-hmm. But what Wembanyama said Monday to the media was awesome.
This is an all-time quote.
He said he was asked about Scoot Henderson, who he has obviously educated himself on and prepared for. Quote, he's really a great player. If I was never born, I think he would deserve the first spot.
It's just an all-time legendary
quote. By the way, that happens to be, in my view, from what I know right now, an accurate statement.
Yeah.
Scoot Henderson would be the number one guy if Victor Wembanyama wasn't there. I
mean, Scoot Henderson would have been the first pick based off what I've seen of him in last year's draft. Like, I would have taken him over the guys in that draft.
Yeah, I think these guys would be 1-2 in last year's draft, no question. No question. Okay. And we've so seen, if, we have
if he's
seen
gonna
Victor
run his
against
mouth
Chet
a little
Holmgren.
Bit like that. If he's going to run his mouth,
sign me
up. By
the
way, like, so, you know, we talked like in the summer.
By the way, Scoot Henderson has also been like, yeah, I'm the number one pick in the draft, too. Well, like, he has got no problem saying stuff, too, which is great. Sign me up for that.
We mentioned this on the pod before. In the summer of 2021, there was a U19, under-19 event, world. I don't know if it was a World Cup or whatever.
FIBA, it was the gold medal game of the under-19 World Championships. And or the under-19 World Cup, one of the other.
The U.S. played France, and Holmgren got dominated by Wembanyama. But you know what? Like, I don't think that's an insult to Chet Holmgren.
No, Chet's really good. That was the first time I watched Victor play, and I watched that game, and I was like, oh my god, this guy is going to be incredible, because Chet Holmgren is and was really good and was older than him, and he got dominated by this guy.
Yeah. So, there's a lot of excitement about this draft coming up. McMahon, you were just saying before the pod started, before the Adelaide 36ers played the Suns, who they beat over the weekend and tonight are playing the Thunder, they played against Overtime Elite, which is the operation out of Atlanta. Mm-hmm. I talked about it last year. I visited their operation on the pod. They played them in Phoenix last week and beat them. But that operation, there's two twins, the Thompson twins.
Mm-hmm.
I think Bontemps, you know, off the top of your head, I think they're 6'9".
Let's say like so. I'll look them up. I'll look them up to clarify why you're.
Yeah, Amen is they're identical, but Amen is number three in Javoni's mock draft, and I might botch the pronunciation, but Asar, I believe it is I think it was eight. I'd have to look that up to be sure. But so yeah, the Adelaide 36ers played these guys, and I'm not trying to continue piling on to the Phoenix Suns, but Overtime Elite only lost by 5. So we're twice as competitive as the Suns, who lost by 10. It's simple math.
But you can do simple math. So I know that that's correct.
Yeah. And so, you know, I'm working on the story on the 36ers, go to shoot around today. And I asked some of these guys about the Thompson twins, and like Antonius Cleveland, who played 30 games for the Madison Hawks. He was the, in the Australian league, was a defense player.
Antonius Cleveland is the, I am told, is the best defender in the Australian league. How about that for data on this podcast? Thank you.
Both kids are six. Both kids are 6'8", by the way.
Yeah, okay. He was defense player of the year, so that'd be a pretty good hint in that direction. Robert Franks, who played a little bit for Orlando Magic, you know, another guy who lit it up. Craig Randall, who averaged 27 a game in the G League last year,
and killed the Suns the other night.
Absolutely. So I'm, you know, I'm asking these guys. Another guy, I'm blanking. His first name is Sunday. I forget his last name off the top of my head, but he was teammates with LaMelo when LaMelo was the next star, and then also teammates with Josh Giddey when he was the next star. So he's seen, you know, big time NBA talent up close. And like those guys were all like, they've all said, hey, I don't know which one's which. Like we couldn't tell them apart, but like they were just like, holy crap, these guys, like the first step. And like, I mean, NBA elite, explosive athleticism, like 6'8", but not like scrawny, like 6'8", put together, explosive, like powerful, you know, 2 feet in the paint, ability to jump and to finish. And like I said, Amen is supposed to have kind of a real point forward, like maybe a little bit more ball handling skills, a little bit better vision. You know, and the question mark on both those guys is the same. They can't shoot right now. Can they develop a jump shot? But if they develop jump shots, though, you know, they're also potential franchise type of players in that draft.
Didn't know McMahon was coming for Jonathan's job. This is big news. Big news on the pod.
No. Oh. I listen. I'm aware of what these guys are because
I'm just messing around.
And I figured if I see the 36ers and they're fresh off scene, I'm like, I'm going to ask, you know, these guys. A couple of them have played in the NBA. You know, they know what.
Oh, it's good stuff, man. I'm just giving you a hard time.
It's just, you know, whenever I call Gavoni, like half the time it that gives like the international ring, you know, or I know he's overseas, uh-huh. And I'll pick up and I'll be like, oh, where are you? He's like, oh, I'm in Cologne watching a second division German game. Oh, where are you? I'm in Montenegro watching U17, European U17s. He's, you know, the man's a maniac. The reason all this is super interesting isn't just talking about what we're headed for the draft next year, but everybody is now seeing this. Mm-hmm. The scouts have known who these players are for a while. But in the story that Woj and Gavoni wrote after this game that ran, the headline for the story was that Wembanyama's agent, Buna Njai, is that how you pronounce his last name, McMahon?
Buna Njai, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who represents,
Rudy's agent, among others.
Yeah, who's represented.
Rudy Fournier gets a lot of the French guys.
The great French players, yeah. He said he's not shutting down because like there are people in the NBA going, okay, don't let him get hurt.
We'll see him enough. In June. Yeah. Which, by the way, would be crazy for the kid to not play for 8 months at 17.
It would just be crazy. Which is what Buna said.
I was glad to see that.
And that was by the way, Scoot Henderson could shut it down too and be top three as well. But that was the headline of the story. But the more interesting thing that I took away from the story was down in the story, which was when they reported that this performance from these two players could help sell a tank to
owners, because you have to sell to the owner, not the fans. Yeah, right. But like the GMs knew what these guys were, and this is just like, you know, add this to the pile of evidence that these kids are special. But when owners see it, and like you said, when the fans see it, it's easier to sell. And I thought what was interesting, not just the Tankapalooza that, you know, buckle up for a whole bunch of call-ups of ninth men of G League teams. Okay. That trend got started last year. Did I tell you I'm here in Oklahoma City? But the other interesting thing is it's not just the Tankapalooza, but it's the trade market that is part of the Tankapalooza.
This is where I was going, but go ahead, Bontemps first. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I just don't think that this game this week is changing anything for this season. If you look right now,
disagree. No, disagree.
All right. Well, let me make my argument before you start hollering.
It's a bad argument.
We come into this season with more teams trying to win this year than we've ever seen before. It's probably 23 teams right now that are trying to win, trying to make the play-in, trying to make the playoffs.
Sacramento.
Whether it's right or not, none of those teams are not doing that because of this game on Tuesday. None of them. And the other seven teams.
This is what I want to talk about.
Hold on.
Today, that's true.
Yes, that's what I said. That game Tuesday hasn't changed anything. And if those teams are a mile out of contention in January, they're going to do the same thing they were going to do anyway.
Not necessarily. This is where I'm going to fight you on that, because the play-in tournament has made it harder for teams. The bubble grows. The bubble grows because of the play-in tournament.
So look at the teams we're talking about. We're talking about Washington. We're talking about Sacramento. We're talking about the Knicks. We're talking about Charlotte. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe Charlotte will just be horrible. I honestly saw them this week, said they're horrible.
We're talking about Portland, but...
I mean, we're talking about Indiana. We're talking maybe Chicago.
Indiana's tanking regardless, to be honest with
you. They got Chicago on their roster. They're not trading.
Chicago also doesn't have their pick. Chicago also doesn't have their pick, and their GM is saying that their season is going to be about winning a playoff series. Hold
on. Well, they got a top four protected pick.
Let's not get too far away. Let's get back on the main road here. There are six teams who do not have control of their pick if it lands number one or number two. The Bulls, if their pick lands one or two, do have control. Okay. The six teams that do not have control of their pick if it lands one or two. And by the way, some of these teams ain't going to be high in the lottery unless we're talking about massive catastrophe. The Clippers goes to the Pelicans. I'm sorry, the Thunder. The Bucks goes to the Pelicans. The Sixers goes to the Nets. The Timberwolves goes to the Jazz. The Nets goes to the Rockets. And the Lakers goes to the Pelicans. We said Pelicans.
Why'd you save the Lakers for last?
There is no reason. But I will say that's the list. That's the team on the list that you scratch. The Nets also as well, if we have a catastrophe with the Nets. So those six teams probably can't think about Wembanyama. Unless, I guess, the Nets, if the Sixers go crazy and then lose their pick. So now
that ain't happening.
Okay, I agree. And I don't think the Bucks are going to be delivering that number one or number two pick to New Orleans either. Okay. So let's put that on the side. The Bulls are in a tough spot if they don't have a good season because their pick goes to Orlando, top four protected. But what I'm saying to you, Bontemps, I agree with you in general. What I'm saying is, when we get to January into trade season, and a team is sitting there in ninth place and they are evaluating, do we want to keep going to fight for a play-in spot, or do we want to go the other direction? And Adam Silver talked about this a little bit today in Abu Dhabi. The Bucks played the Hawks earlier today in Abu Dhabi. And he was like, well, teams shouldn't be tanking because we have a lottery system that's more even.
Clearly worked out for you last year, Adam. Good job, right, bud.
So, but I mean, just for example, let's look at the Portland Trailblazers from 1 year ago. They have an injury to Dame Lillard. They had a team that was had designs on competing on some level last year. They have an injury to Dame Lillard. Then they trade CJ McCollum, and they even shut down Anthony Simons.
They did a normal tank job.
And they ended up with the seventh pick.
Yeah, okay? They did a normal tank job.
Okay. Winning is an everyday mindset. And on the Ways to Win podcast, coaches Craig Robinson and John Calipari are here to help. Each week, Craig and Coach Cal use their on-court wisdom to solve your off-court problems. Whether it's trouble at home or a workplace dilemma, the coaches will help you find a winning formula for success. And you'll hear from prominent athletes, business leaders, and celebrities who reveal insights that made them into the leaders they are today. Like President Obama, who breaks down his bracket and talks about how he deals with pressure by projecting confidence, believing in your team, and taking criticism. Listen to Ways to Win wherever you get your podcasts. Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. That is, they are a team that was in the middle there, and they decided to go that direction.
Yeah, they were that more. There was some like, you didn't want to get a shot up there when you had a chance at the end of that game type of situations with the.
Listen, we can go back.
That was more than normal.
We can go back and look at all sorts of teams that you covered one a few years ago that engineered all sorts of outcomes at the end of games and tried to tank games and tried to lose games. My point is Portland had Dame get hurt, have surgery, and tanked. That is normal. I agree teams will be trying to manufacture losses towards the back half of the year. My argument is you're saying that things are going to change because of this game on Tuesday. I personally don't think that's the case, because to me, what would cause that to change is if you had teams going, we were not going to tank. And today, now we're going to try to tank to get into the top
not
three.
Today.
I think there's levels of tanking. And I think you are going to see absolutely egregious the continuation, because let's be honest, the Blazers last year, that has always happened. Last year was the first time that we started seeing guys called up from the G League specifically because they stunk. Because not calling up guys who averaged 26 a game in the G League, not calling up guys who were you know.
But hey, I think we're talking.
We want to take a look at
things.
This, guys. Calling guys from the G League specifically to lose games.
I think
the Thunder called up their like seventh and eighth best G League players. Never practiced with the team. They played 87 minutes combined.
What I care about is teams that are going to trade. There's more good teams, and therefore more good players. And if. Three or four teams in January decide to go to the route. Maybe it's two teams.
Well, but this
There's
is my
be better players going to be available. That's why if you're a team like the Lakers, if you're the Los Angeles Lakers and you're sitting here and you're going, boy, we really don't like any of these.
Yeah, maybe they'll trade LeBron in January. I know they can't trade LeBron.
Actually,
it's a joke.
LeBron has a.
I know it was a joke. It was a joke, okay. Lakers fans.
But if you're the Lakers and you're sitting here going, well, we've got this lukewarm possible trade with the Pacers, and we've got a lukewarm possible trade with the Jazz. Why don't you wait until midseason when there might be a couple of teams that are like, you know what? We're going to go backwards. Okay. Maybe it's a classic tank Bontemps, but I think it's going to be higher quality teams.
This is where I'll disagree though, because again, we have to look at this from the incentives of the teams that we're talking about, right? All the teams that are in the play-in mix for different reasons are going to want to be in the play-in mix. Like, despite the fact that these guys are at the top of the lottery,
you're proving your own rule. They're not going to want to be in it because they're going to see Wembanyama and Scoot Henderson.
No. That's what, but you're not taking my point. Look at the teams that we're talking about. Teams like Washington, Sacramento, the Knicks, the Bulls, these teams that we think are going to be in the play-in tournament mix, right? All those teams have only signaled that they want to be competitive. Everything they've done the past 3 years.
Wembanyama is a game changer.
But my point is nothing those teams have done in recent years would indicate that's what they're going to do regardless
of
whether Victor's
there. Because Wembanyama hasn't been available.
Yeah, but that's not, they've had
Scoot
opportunity.
Henderson.
I understand. These teams have had opportunities in the past to try to go the other direction. And at every turn, they haven't done it. And everything they've done this offseason has indicated they're not going to do that. And it's not like people in the league, like, yes, owners would have saw that video. People running these teams knew these guys were coming. It's not like Victor Wembanyama appeared on the stage yesterday.
I know, but you got to sell your owner.
Yes,
and
it's
your fan bases.
My point, though, is that it's too late for that, for those teams.
No, it's not. No, it's not.
You're going to have...
No, it's not. Via trade, via, you know, mysterious ailments. Like, it's the season hasn't started. It's not too late. By the way, Arkansas just had their pro day. And, you know, they've got this loaded recruiting class led by Nick Smith, who's also projected to be a top five. Ran into a scout today, the 36er shoot around. He said he drove in from Arkansas's pro day. He said 29 of 30 teams were there. So, I mean, I think this
was... Who was the team that wasn't there?
The Timberwolves. They don't have a first-round pick.
Guess not.
Yeah. So, 29 of 30. But apparently, like, Nick Smith, I think Gavoni has him 4 in the mock draft. And then there's another kid who's supposed to be like maybe a lottery, probably a first round pick for sure. But my point is, like, it's not just Victor and Scoot. This is a loaded draft. And when we talk about tanking, obviously the primary motivation is Victor, Scoot. But I'm telling you, teams are tanking for the floor. Right? Oh, the lottery odds are flattened. Yeah, but if you have the worst record, you're guaranteed a top five pick. If you're number two, you're guaranteed top six. That's if Adam Silver cares about Tankapalooza and trying to get rid of it, the flattening the lottery odds was a start. You've got to play the lottery out. You cannot give teams a guaranteed floor, or you're going to have them continue. That's
all right. That's
like Portland. That's that was nice, as much as anything.
I don't disagree with that, but we're getting too far off topic. Okay.
I also think this is an odd... I'm also just going to end with this. I think this is a very odd conversation to have, this entire conversation we just had, when we're literally going into the season with more teams trying to win than in the last decade.
Again, Bontemps, that is why this is potentially a game changer, because there's going to be teams that are going to be on the outside who are like, this guy is so freaking good.
The word potentially just has... is being used, is being given a ton of extra juice there.
I hate to break it to you, but that is our job. Our job is to talk about potentially.
Well, yeah, I think
that's,
we just wasted
80% of this
minutes,
podcast is potentially.
Yeah,
that's... otherwise, why are we doing it?
Hey, how are we doing as far as trying to get a mute button on Bontemps? Have we had any success in that pursuit?
God. All right, it's time for trivia, which means it's time for Bontemps to have the floor.
Now we're on mute. Now we can't mute him.
Now it's time for our Hoop Collective Trivia.
We've talked a lot about the Kings, a team that is going to try to make the play-in despite the fact that they probably shouldn't and should be trying to get Victor since they passed on Luka a couple years ago. As a team that's had the longest playoff drought in the NBA, semi-related stat, there's a team that has been in the bottom 10 in offensive efficiency for the past 10 years.
10 years?
In a row. Who is it?
10 straight years. That's impressive. Is it Orlando?
It is Orlando.
God, I am so damn good at this.
Well, and so humble.
I said it was a related hint, both because they missed the playoffs and they're our team today. So I thought you
and
might
I
be
did,
able to
I did just watch Orlando and Memphis, and I get to see them again tomorrow night. Yeah, and look, they drafted Paolo to be to be an offensive focal point. I do think with him and Franz Wagner, they've got at least two guys to build around. Unfortunately, they gave Franz a night off in Memphis. They decided to start a second center next to Paolo.
Franz Wagner has an ankle issue that he suffered in Eurobasket. I think that's why he didn't play.
But that's our team
we're talking about this week. What's going on in Orlando? So before you launch.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Why would they do that?
Very strange trade.
Why would you do that?
Orlando. McMahon, you saw him the other night. Paolo Banchero's first game as Orlando Magic, yeah, at least preseason.
And it was tough because, one, obviously, even though Mo Bamba's a good three-point shooter for a big, they had two bigs with him. They had Paolo playing at the three, and they kind of see Paolo, Franz as like these interchangeable playmaking scoring forwards. And so it's really hard to judge anything until you get to see those two guys together. Plus, Paolo's welcome to the NBA was poor spacing and Dylan Brooks just, you know, breathing all in his grill and scratching him and elbowing him and just, you know, so it was it was not much fun for Mr. Banchero in his first taste of real NBA action preseason. But still, it certainly was a little bit more difficult than what he dealt with in the Vegas Summer League. But, you know, I look at that team. They've got like several interesting young players, but there's only two guys that I would be confident betting on at this point. And again, that's Franz and Paolo. Jalen Suggs, last year is kind of a lost year for him as a rookie, you know, missed a lot of time because of injury. And he's, you know, I'm not quite sure. I think he might be one of those point guards who, if you don't have a lot of shooting around him, it's going to be a real struggle. They like Markelle Fultz. He's out with a toe injury right now, is going to be out for a little bit. You know, Bamba shows flashes. Certainly he gets to some shots on the defensive end, blocks some shots on the defensive end. That's pretty impressive, but he's been pretty hit and miss. You know, I think that it's not going out on a limb to say they very well could be in that Victor Scoot Derby. It's going to be a struggle this year.
Well, they're going to be a team that's going to be there by default. But I think to briefly go back to the tanking discussion, Orlando is sort of the epitome of that on both sides of it. You go back to 2005, you know, they've gotten the number one pick multiple times. Obviously got Shaq, got the Chris Webber pick, turned it into Penny, then got Dwight Howard. Mm-hmm. But since they traded Dwight Howard, that's when that streak of being in the bottom 10 in the league in offense began. And yeah, they made a couple brief playoff appearances where they got obliterated in the first round.
Yeah.
But they have been completely irrelevant for a decade. And much of that was them winning 25 games, trying to get lucky in the lottery and finishing second one time, finishing fifth and getting Mario Hezonja instead of Kristaps Porzingis another time. Like, you know, they're sort of the poster child of the idea of going through the draft is great.
Yeah.
But if you don't get the right players, it doesn't quite work. You could be stuck in a ditch for a very, very long time.
Well, they get Jonathan Isaac and like they don't know when he's going to be back on the floor.
Jonathan Isaac hurt his, I believe it was his left ACL, but he tore his ACL on New Year's Day 2020. So,
well, he played in the bubble. He the last injury he had was he came back, he played in the bubble, and I watched him get hurt. It was at a game I was at in the bubble, and he hasn't played since then.
Oh, I forgot he played in the bubble. He tore his ACL in the bubble. He got hurt.
He blew his knee up in the bubble. Whatever he got hurt before, he came back in the bubble, and then he had a devastating knee injury, and then he hurt his hamstring earlier this year. And the only word so far is he'll play sometime this season.
Right.
Who knows when?
So let me just take, in my view, a frank evaluation on the Magic. You're watching the Magic because you're watching Franz Wagner. You can watch Mo Wagner if you want, but really you should watch Franz Wagner, the three. And you're watching Banchero. I think there's a question mark on Jalen Suggs. We'll see.
Mm-hmm.
You're watching those two guys and you're thinking about the lottery. You're thinking about that they could have a top five pick again. and they have the Bulls pick. And the Bulls are in a worrisome place. Maybe they will overcome. Maybe Lonzo will get back. Maybe Patrick Williams will be a difference-making player. That's what you're looking at if you're the Magic. You are saying, okay, we got these two young guys we really like, and potentially, depending on what happens with the Bulls, two good-looking picks in potentially this loaded
draft. Yeah, and by the way, Franz is the first pick that they got from the Bulls. So that trade That's is right. already, like, straight up, if it was just, hey, we're giving up Vucevic, we're getting Franz, they'd have done that deal in a heartbeat.
And Wendell Carter, who's pretty good, by the way.
Wendell Carter. So it's like they've got Carter, they've got Mo Bamba. Like, they've got a lot of guys who they are NBA, they're young NBA players. I just don't know that they're like
– This is a team that could do trades. Players. So they have, in my view, a couple of guys who are will be trade targets, although they were trade targets last year. So one is Terrence Ross, who is a potentially electric off-the-bench scorer. He's been rumored to be traded for like a year and a half, but hasn't been traded. This is the last year of his contract. And Gary Harris, who they extended last year, hasn't quite been the same player the last couple of years, but he could potentially be an interesting player via trade. And maybe even Mo Bamba, who they are not going to extend and could be an interesting player via trade. So again, I think if you're going down to the Amway Center, you're going down there and hoping for Powell to look great, Wagner to look great, and have a competitive loss. That's your goal.
I think they'll get a lot of that this year. And like those two guys, they, you know, that gives you hope for the future, but they definitely need, you know, they need at least one more core piece, because again, you know, you're talking about Isaac and Bamba and Suggs. I mean, those are top five picks that you're not, are they core pieces?
I don't know if we know about Suggs yet. I really, really was impressed with Suggs at Gonzaga. I thought he had great makeup.
Yeah, so was I.
And so I'm going to be watching for him. He could be included. But the reality is the Magic are going to take it in the teeth. The Eastern Conference, you know, the game that you were at last night, Bontemps, as an example, you went to see the Cavs and Sixers play Wednesday night.
Yeah.
Evan Mobley didn't play. He has a sprained ankle. Like Garland and Donovan Mitchell were pretty darn good in that game. And
yeah, all four guards in that game, James Harden, Tyrese Maxey, Darius Garland, Donovan Mitchell, did a great job scoring and not so great a job stopping the guys across from scoring. Okay. They all look great.
That's totally fine. My point is that's going to be an average night in Eastern Conference.
For sure.
Donovan Mitchell's locked in a defense this year, he says, for the fourth straight year.
Those guys are going to go. There's going to be wars in the Eastern Conference.
Well, look, even the night before, I was at MSG to see the Knicks play the Pistons, another team like Orlando. Knicks are going to be pretty good. Jalen Brunson is going to make a huge difference there. Like, the Knicks aren't going to win 50 games or anything, but they're going to be a competitive, tough team to play every night.
The Knicks are going to be hard to beat in the Garden.
Yeah.
They're good enough to win, have a good record at home, and those teams have to come in there. So, like, if you're Orlando, I'm sorry, you're just going to take it in the teeth. The East is too deep. And that's fine for Orlando. And I would just say, you know, the guys like Wendell Carter, those guys are not going to be on the same timeline as, you know, the two potential draft picks that they have this year coming up, plus the other guys that they have. So I wouldn't be surprised if he gets made available at some point, too. So
look, they're in a situation like what Oklahoma City was a couple of years ago when in the Evan Mobley, Scotty Barnes, Cade Cunningham draft, Oklahoma City had a chance to have the first pick and the fifth pick, and they ended up with the sixth pick. And Orlando could have the first pick and the fifth pick, and or they could end up with, you know, the Bulls pick being, if the Bulls make the playoffs, it won't be in the lottery, or if the Bulls jump in the top four, it could be like what happened with the Rockets and they get a big time player and don't lose their pick. So they're one of the teams that on lottery night, you mentioned those teams that potentially have the number one pick from another team, Brian. Like the Magic could be a team that's sitting there thinking we could get two top 7-8 picks in a loaded draft, or we could end up outside the top four and thinking about what could have been.
Right. But the best chance that you have is to give yourself the best chance to get one of those top picks. And that's what they're going to do. Okay. Before we go, I wanted to touch briefly on the reported back and forth at the Warriors practice earlier this week between Draymond Green and Jordan Poole. And this
back
is
back and forth. I'd like to have a back and forth with Bond Temps by that definition.
I think we know that there are altercations that happen in practices and locker rooms routinely. This one got public. Whatever happens there, we'll see going forward. By the time this podcast comes out there, you know, they could have spoken on it and changed the dynamics of it. But let me just say this. This particular moment on the NBA calendar, there is always a handful of guys, maybe it's three, maybe it's seven, maybe it's two, that this is some of the most important days of their lives. And Jordan Poole is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, Jordan Poole is negotiating with the Warriors over generational family wealth.
Did you see that Tyler Hero contract? I'm sure he did.
He certainly mm-hmm. did.
So do the Warriors.
So he is no doubt negotiating a nine-figure contract. Maybe they get a deal done. Maybe they don't.
I'm going to predict they get a deal done on the pod.
You broke up there for a second.
I believe they will get a deal done between now and the deadline.
Okay.
Jordan Poole will get extended.
Okay. Tyler Hero got 4 years and $130 million. I believe 120 of it is guaranteed.
And the incentives are, I would say, very unlikely. So I think you're looking at, to me, the Jordan Poole deal is going to be a baseline of more than $120 million guaranteed.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting that you would say that because, you know, you've been telling me for a year now that Tyler Hero is overrated by me. And yet, so when he gets, you know, $20 million a year, you're like, or $30 million a year, you're like, huh, it's, you know, it's not going to be $40 million a year, basically, is what you're saying.
Well, I don't think he's going to win Defensive Player of the Year. That's one of the incentives, I believe. I don't think he's going to win MVP, and that's another one of the incentives. So,
wow.
I would say they're unlikely.
They are unlikely, but even
congrats
if
congrats to Tyler Hero. It's a
dollar
great,
incentives. He's still getting
great,
$30 million.
It's a great deal for him.
He's guaranteed $120 million. So yeah, the point is, if you're like Cam Johnson's another guy, Cam Johnson got hurt on Wednesday night. You know, these, I don't think Cam Johnson's going to get that much money, but, you know, and as I've covered players over the years in this situation, I can say that some players have handled it just fine. And, you know, they know they're going to get paid and they're chill about it. Other players, as you can imagine, it drives them a little bit batty because their whole lives have been working towards this moment. Getting this contract, you know, the first big contract. And in the case of Jordan Poole, who was a late first round pick, he's got more money than me, but he, you know, Steph Curry probably makes in about four games what Jordan Poole makes for the year, maybe five. So, you know, the contract thing, even if the player gets the contract, sometimes even the new money is a thing. So I will just say that when a player who's in contract negotiations like this is involved in something like this, I always wonder what the dynamic of that is going to be. So that's my takeaway from that.
Well, and the other thing is, so Jordan Poole, let's say, likely gets his extension done. Who else on that roster wants an extension right now?
That would be one, Draymond Green.
And Andrew Wiggins, but in particular, one Draymond Green. And I think one of the biggest question marks about the Warriors going in this year is, hey, how are they going to handle all these potential extensions? And for the ones that don't get done, like, is that going to be a problem? Is there going to be friction? Is there going to be drama? Well, kind of seems dramatic.
Well, and, you know, and I think The Athletic kind of reported that one of the instigators here was Poole talking about how much money he's going to have. And Draymond, now Draymond has that money. You know, Draymond wants more of it, but I believe Draymond's made over $100 million. If he, you know, but everybody wants more. But if one guy who is right, as Bontemps said, that they, you know, I think Bontemps is not guessing.
I think if you look at it, I think it logically, it just makes sense for them to get a deal done. Jordan Poole was drafted 25th. He hasn't made a lot of money, and the Warriors have to have him locked up. They can't, if they can't let him get to restricted free agency and deal with max offer sheets and stuff next summer. Like, I think it just makes sense for everybody to get it done.
Okay. So whatever. But anyway, like the Athletic was reporting that Poole was talking about what he's going to spend his new money on, and that may have instigated it. And if you're Draymond, you may be, and Draymond's come out and said he's not going to get the extension. Whatever talks they've had, they must have.
That doesn't mean he's thrilled about it.
Right. And so if one guy's talking about it, about his new money, and you didn't get the money, maybe that's an issue. But again, it all goes back to what happens in these days when these contracts are there.
One other thing to talk about when it comes to the Warriors and money, this is going to be a very interesting 12 months for the Warriors, because I think we're getting to the point where Joe Lacob has sort of hit the breaking point in terms of dollars spent. And not that I'm crying poor for the Warriors, they're doing just fine. But there are going to be, to McMahon's point about Andrew Wiggins, about Draymond, this Poole situation, you got Klay Thompson making a ton of money still. There's going to be decisions to be made. You got James Wiseman, who's going to have a big number next year as a fourth year player option. I'm sure they're going to pick it up. But for a long time, it's just been the Warriors just keeping their guys, just paying everybody, keeping everybody around. And between the CBA talks this year, whether something changes with the luxury tax, or what happens with some of these extension discussions and where these numbers wind up, might be the first time we see the Warriors really start making some financial decisions. And it will be, to me, fascinating to see what that looks like.
For sure. I mean, when you look at what their commitments are, I mean, Wiseman's salary next year goes up $3 million. So you could say, okay, it goes up $3 million. That might cost them just the Wiseman increase. Forget about the Steph Curry increase. Steph Curry is worth every penny times two. Just Wiseman getting his contracted increase in where they are in the repeater tax could cost them $15 million.
I was going to say, it's not times two when you get to the repeater tax.
And if you just say eliminate him from the roster, it might save them $50 or $60 million.
Right.
So like there's going to be that every dollar can, and like same thing with this Poole negotiations, right? Like Tyler Hero gets that extension. They probably end up paying him more than they were planning to or wanted to. Like every dollar they're spending there counts. Like it actually is.
But I will
just
say the way you handle this, like look at the hangover effect of what's going on with DeAndre Ayton right now. Ayton got his money, but there's still a hangover. Remember
there
Gordon
is?
Hayward?
I didn't think there was a hangover.
Remember Gordon Hayward, the way that played out? They made him go out and get an offer sheet.
Sure.
And it like laid the groundwork for him to walk on him 3 years later. Like,
yeah. Well, that's the thing. When you let guys get a restricted free agent, even though the Pacers, for whatever reason, didn't put a player option or didn't put any bells and whistles on that offer sheet, typically, even if you keep a guy, it's going to be at a contract that's worse than what you could have just signed him to.
It's one thing to have a guy.
He was a player option, so he got out after 3 years instead of four.
It's one thing for a guy. It's one thing for you to come to an agreement with a guy to keep him with your team. It's another thing to say, hey, we want you to go find your money elsewhere, and then we'll just keep you anyway.
Yeah, squeeze. Like, you're going to have to squeeze for every dollar.
Just there's like everything else. These are negotiations, and to your point about Ayton, like there's lingering things that come from them sometimes. And we'll see what the lingering things from this are.
Any issue that, Draymond or Wiggins or Poole would have goes back to the Pat Riley mantra, which I'm not necessarily taking Riley's side, the disease of more, which Riley talks about, being something that drags at the possibility for teams to win, to have put together dynasties, because after success, there's this, everybody wants more. And by the way, like, unless they did an extension with Steve Kerr and haven't announced it, I think he last got an extension like 3 years ago. Like, I think it's about time for Steve Kerr to get taken care of.
Yeah, so, you never know.
Counting
it's
a luxury tax
too.
What's that?
I just said you never know what happens with that stuff too. Like Greg Popovich, I don't think has had an extension announced in like 10 years. So
yeah, they stopped announcing them with Eric Spoelstra years ago.
Yeah, so it's hard to know if Steve is up or not. But
right. Okay. Well, thank you for listening to Hoop Collective Podcast. Thank you to Bontemps. Thank you, McMahon. Thank you to Jackson and Bruce, our producers. We will talk to you next week.
Adios, amigos.